There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, well, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, brand new week to work with. Glad you're here. Live local talk over the next couple of hours, and probably the best thing to do, even if you're not going to call today, you're going to call sometime in the future. We're going to keep the number in the speed dial. Keep it in speed dial. What is speed dial? So keep it in your contacts list for FM Talk 106.5. Phone number is 251-343-0106. Also works on our text line, so you can check it out. You could actually talk to a live human being or just send words across the connection. Either way, we appreciate your interaction with the show. Coming up today, we'll be joined by Cameron Smith here in just a little bit with the R Street Institute and AL.com. Lots to talk about with Cameron in national news and in state news. And also in the second hour, Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News will join us to talk about some state news. The numbers is kind of like the postmortem on last week's primary runoff. We talked about how low, 9%. Dalton could probably remind us what the statewide turnout was because he guessed it correctly and won with 12%. 12% statewide, 9% in Mobile County, I think is 15.5%, give or take, percent in Baldwin County. Some places, I know at one point Madison County was like at 3%. I think it did come up to 7%. Now, some counties in the Black Belt turned out at like 40%, which is... calls the investigation from Secretary of State John Merrill's office, so that's a whole other story. But we're going to do a... Todd Stacey's going to join us to talk about what that... Is there any takeaway when you look at the very, very low turnout numbers from last week? Is there anything that you can project forward to the general election? Because we're like 160 days or whatever, 180 days away from the general election. And that goes by, you know, as you get older, that seems to go by in the blink of an eye. So it'll be on us soon. Is there anything, the fact that nobody showed up? I mean, obviously, that's hyperbole, but very, very few people showed up to vote in the primary runoff. So does that mean anything that we can project forward into the general? We'll talk about that. Also on our list of items today, yes, somebody asked him about the alligator. Listen, I don't know the situation with a 12-foot alligator that they removed over there in Daphne. Some people saying, couldn't they have just waited a couple weeks as alligator season opens next month in the state of Alabama? I don't know. Ask the people at Department of Conservation. Ask Chris Nix and them. There are probably a very good reason why they removed that alligator now instead of letting somebody who drew a tag do it. Probably number one, because they're not sure that they would get that gator. But a 12-footer, that's solid. That's a lot of reptile right there. We'll put that story up if you want to, because we know that all stories about alligators and animal stories will lead every local TV website, so we'll might as well just join in, Dalton. We'll put that one up as well. And then I saw this story, the one they're not going to report when they're reporting about alligators on the lam or on the, you know, getting removed, that the president today has, and I'm bummed about this too, because I think we could pitch for this. White House event today, this Made in America, right? The Made in America product showcase they're doing at the White House is going on now as the president hosts companies from across the country for the Made in America product showcase to celebrate and highlight each state's effort and commitment to American-made goods. Businesses from each of the 50 states display their products produced in the United States, right? So this is the Made in the USA kind of vibe, which, by the way, I'd like to point out, every day, U.S. citizens for hosts, right? USA-made radio. A majority of y'all, United States citizens, listeners, although we got a bunch of people, you know, outside the borders, which I don't know if they're Russian bots or whatever, but we check our stats. There's people outside our borders listening. But, yeah, I think we should pitch for next year. If we're looking for American-made, I mean, we make radio. I know they're looking for probably more tangible things, but I think we should push our angle here to have FM Talk 106.5 up there next year. Who made it this year? The Redland Cotton Company is representing Alabama at this White House showcase for American-made products. And all 50 states go, you bring your best, right? You get selected. Redland Cotton, they make linens, right? Like for your bed. They're out of Lawrence County, and they are representing Alabama today at this event. It says it makes heirloom sheets and other items from cotton grown in Alabama. Now, I understand the idea of heirloom and heirloom tomatoes and family heirlooms, but heirloom sheets, to me, heirloom makes you think old, right? Things you've had for a while. Could possibly my twin size bed, teams of the NFL heirloom sheets qualify? Would they be heirloom? Would the team, remember the teams of the NFL sheets? Dalton, you're probably not old, but teams of the NFL that came, the sheets, the pillowcase, the bedspread, little boys all over, we're getting those. So it's old enough now. I probably had that in the 70s or early 80s. Could that be an heirloom now? But that's not made by Redland Cotton Company. But it's cool. Redland Cotton out of Lawrence County is featured, and they are a company that I think they take all their cotton harvest from up there north of the Tennessee River, that area. They get their cotton from there. They produce, I think, the textiles in the state and sell them nationally. So they are featured today at the President's event up at the White House. So Redland Cotton this year, I would sure hope that it would be FM Talk 106.5 next year. Just pushing that. Also, the discussion nationally, kind of interesting. We'll try to get this on about 1:15 as... Now, Rand Paul, which, you know, y'all, if you've been listening to any period of time, you know I love Senator Rand Paul. Just the fact that he keeps people scratching their heads. Like, people go, I don't know what side he's on. I like people like that. As Rand Paul has a lot of people fired up today because he has asked for John Brennan's security clearance to be revoked. Now, of course, we've been following what Brennan has said about President Trump since the event there in Helsinki. Now Senator Rand Paul tweeting out today, is John Brennan monetizing his security clearance? Is John Brennan making millions of dollars divulging secrets to the mainstream media with his attacks on Donald Trump? So he's asking that Brennan lose his clearance. And when he asked the question, is he monetizing his security clearance? I don't know that he's saying he is or not. He's asked the question. I think that's a pretty tough one there. What do you think? Because people are very mad that Rand Paul, they said, is siding with the president against the intelligence agencies in Washington. You know, sometimes Senator Rand Paul is across the aisle from President Trump on a lot of things. He's a, you know, holdout vote, and sometimes he's right there with him. So I think that makes it something worth watching. We will talk about that coming up. All right, coming back from the break, Cameron Smith's going to join us. He's with the R Street Institute and AL.com. We will talk some of this presidential politics and talk about Rand Paul. Also here in the state of Alabama, what's next as we go forward 180 some odd days into the general election? We'll get that from him. And also your calls and texts at 343-0106, 343-0106. And by the way, thank you again to the JCs for hosting us again for the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Another great time down at the rodeo, and we'll see y'all next year. It'll be the 86th Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Had a great time down there, JCs. Thanks, y'all. And we're coming right back. News is next.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1220 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, Monday style. Glad you're here doing the live local talk thing, and you're a big part of it. We do it from noon to two on weekdays. Phone number 343-0106, 343-0106. I want to say hello to my buddy, Cameron Smith, with the R Street Institute and AL.com, joining us today. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean.
So first thing, let's go. You want to go state or do you want to go national first? Because I have a big stack of questions for you. You pick.
Pick your poison.
Okay, let's go national. All right, let's go national. I got a couple things here. As a lot of people said, President Trump might have had his worst week in office last week. Do you believe that or not?
I don't really know how to measure things at this point as far as worst. I think the issue here is people who like Trump are probably like, huh? And people who hate Trump are like, you're a treasonous traitor. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I was looking at it was Wall Street Journal or Gallup or somebody had a poll out that said, you know, his approval rating overall is like 45%, and it actually ticked up a little bit.
That's right. So in that bad week,
I believe that.
Yeah, in that bad week. That's what I was wondering, because in that supposed to be very, very bad week, I think it's Wall Street Journal, New York Times poll, President Trump went up a point, which may be within the margin of error, but he sure didn't go down.
Yeah, and I think that basically reflects that we are a 50-50-ish country right now when it comes to Trump, and people who don't like Trump can't stand him, and people who think he's pretty good are either like cheerleading for him like a Sean Hannity, mm-hmm. or they're sort of like meh, which is most Republicans.
So I mean, where's the value of doing anything for political reasons? I mean, if the concrete is dry, the cement is dry on both sides, and you're not going to really move the needle, why even go out and try to put spin on things? Is it to hold a lead, or is it, I mean, if you're not going to be able to gain new people, I don't know.
I think it's kind of inertia. I mean, do I think Trump can lose voters? Oh, absolutely. I think his upside, his ability to pull more people in, it is somewhat limited, because I do think that and the same reality is true for Democrats as well. I mean, you're really competing, nationally speaking, for a margin in the middle, because I promise you 2020 is going to be close. These midterms, you're going to see a lot of close elections. But the truth is, it's only in these swing areas. In Alabama, for example, you're going to see conservatives, or I shouldn't say conservatives at this point, you're going to see Republicans continue to be successful. I don't see a situation where California Republicans are going to be particularly successful. I mean, we're polarizing within the states, and nationally it's in the margin in the middle. So, I mean, Trump has to do something truly atrocious. Otherwise, people are kind of, I think, numb to it at this point, because he's been so over the top for so long.
Okay, but the idea of polarization, you know, we've always had the left wing and the right wing, and then, you know, sure, we talked about the people that we're a center-right country, but the majority of people are in this moderate section. But as you continue this discussion, I think a lot of people just aren't voicing, but I can't be out there, you know, polling every household, but it sounds like what pundits are saying out there, you're kind of saying some of the thing, is there's not much middle ground anymore. And if there's not, then who are you swaying come 2020? I mean, it sounds like everybody just lines up and votes again.
Yeah, and I don't think that that's necessarily an incorrect understanding. But the thing to remember, and Reagan said this regarding liberty, that it's just sort of not passed down in the bloodstream. We're always fighting for the future. Newt Gingrich had a good book on this. I mean, it's the notion that, it may be concrete for 2020, but we're always pushing. And I think right now, a lot of people are negative about politics right now. They're sort of throwing up their hands, saying it's gross, it's disgusting. Well, one of the things that I'm finding interesting is the old alliances in terms of policy and party have broken down. They're kind of all over the place. The traditional Republicans must believe all this, Democrats must believe all that, it just doesn't hold true anymore. And I think what we're going to see in 2020 and beyond is a continued fracturing of the parties based on sort of these hard ideological camps. But unfortunately, what I'm seeing is it's basically feelings driven now. It's I'm a Republican and Democrats are socialist, or I'm a Democrat and Republicans are fascist. That's not helpful for anybody.
Talk about on the national front, really international front here, as I saw you on Twitter commenting on it, and you know, so many people after the president fires off the tweet at Rouhani this morning about never ever threaten the United States again or you'll suffer consequences, the likes of which few of, it sounds like something from Game of Thrones, but so did what the Iranians said too. But this saber rattling between Rouhani and President Trump that I guess got kicked off by Pompeo yesterday, is there, I mean, it's always, you know, you're going to watch mainstream media, they're going to always say, this is it for Trump, this is the last big thing. I've gotten so callous to that. I mean, I don't think anything comes of that. Do you?
I just couldn't get past the fact it reminded me of one of my grandfather's emails in all caps.
Yes, yes.
It's right. Like, come on, man. I mean, it looks like you're screaming.
Maybe he is.
This is, yeah. This is saber rattling. Here's the thing that bothers me the most, and I'll just put a fine point on it. This Trump is behaving like the kid that always sort of like punches and beats on the like little kids, but when there's a bigger kid around, he's like all nice. And that's when you look at North Korea or Iran, he can be sort of a tough talker. When it comes to Russia, he's all mealy mouthed, and that drives me insane. I mean, let's be consistent. I mean, if we're going to call North Korea's dictator little rocket man, we're going to do this sort of, oh, we'll blow you out of the water type antagonism. Why not? Then just say, oh, but with Russia, we need to be friendly.
Well, is there not a better chance?
It seems kind of inconsistent.
Well, I mean, but if you're looking at, listen, I don't like saber rattling, although I have a theory about it I'll get to in a second. But if you're looking at countries that we should worry about, you're looking at that, right? You're watching the two lines. Their ability to do something, as in North Korea's nuclear ability, Iran's wannabe nuclear ability, and so their ability to use a weapon and their propensity to do so, right? That's where those two lines cross. That's where trouble comes from, where I think those lines are skewed. I think Iran and North Korea line up a lot more than Russia. I understand what you're saying. I'm not discounting what you're saying. But at the same time, I think maybe you don't have the chance to have as much behind the scenes work with a Iran or North Korea as you might with Russia. You know what I'm saying? And maybe there's a different tact. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing for me, particularly with Iran, is you have a lot of machismo in that culture.
Yeah.
So the fact that Trump dignified a sort of squishy threat with, hey, I'm going to beat you up, is basically what he said. He gives legitimacy to that threat and says, oh, well, I'm actually concerned about it. Ignoring that in particularly Iranian culture is much more of a slap than actually engaging it and having the back and forth. And I think when we start engaging in these fun little rhetorical games on Twitter, that's just not good diplomacy. It's not thoughtful. It's reactive. I get it that it's like some people are loving it. They're like,
sure they do,
you
yeah.
tell those Iranians.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it just seems silly to me.
Yeah, I wonder, if the cockamamie theory du jour for me is that maybe the bluster and the public saber rattling and the posturing and the, you know, puffing up like two-tom turkey kind of thing keeps the real danger from happening. Because I think back through history, and I'm sure there could be many, many exceptions, but I'm thinking of the World Wars and other involvements for our country. The rhetoric was really not nearly as fiery as what was going on behind the scenes. In other words, the readying of the armies, the preparation, you know, the sneak attacks on our country, these kind of things where, you know, maybe if they would have just taken to sending newspaper editorials back and forth across the Atlantic or Pacific, they, you know, that would have done them better. But it seems like maybe this is some way to vent out. I'm not defending it because people are saying how juvenile it is. I agree. I agree it's juvenile. I think it's silly. Is this some way to, I don't know, is this some diffusing of what could be real hostilities?
Yeah, the way I look at it, and what bothers me the most, is it doesn't seem particularly thoughtful. I mean, I understand the Trump apologist will be like, but you just don't understand, Cameron.
Right, right.
There's an elaborate plan here. Well, what I'm seeing from like insiders in the space, from people who I know in public policy circles, is that he's just sort of doing whatever he wants. This is not in consultation with a thought out diplomatic strategy. It's, hey, I got my phone. It's late at night. I saw this and I'm mad. That's kind of like what most rank and file Americans do. And I get why it's, you know, good politics, good retail politics. But you have really smart people at the State Department. You have folks who understand very complicated international dynamics. And if Twitter is a part of this and there is a component that says, hey, late night tweets to foreign leaders threatening them, hey, that's part of the strategy. Okay, but I just don't see it.
All right, coming right back, more with Cameron Smith with the R Street Institute and AL.com. That's a good question. Y'all were talking about the middle ground. Where is the middle ground? What could break the ice? Huh? It's one of the many questions I'll ask Cameron when we get back. You can send yours, too, to the text line at 343-0106 or hop on the phone and do the same. We're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. The digits, 343-0106, 343-0106. Also find me Twitter at FM Talk 106.5. Continue our conversation with Cameron Smith from the R Street Institute and AL.com. And I do want to get into some state talk here in just a second, but I want to dabble a little bit more in this national stuff. If you could, can you do it? Can you hang on?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, very good. So let's do this. Number one, you want to assess my fanboy status of Rand Paul and the latest today. Because, you know, I think it's interesting that those who would be all on board said Rand Paul's always, you know, behind President Trump. In fact, look at the health care vote. Look at others. He's not there. But now, in the case of whether President Trump was in the right or wrong in Helsinki, Rand Paul is on his side. And he's also calling for Brennan's security status.
Yeah, I mean, the idea, the reason that you have security clearances for officials once they leave government is in case a current director or official wants to speak with them about, you know, matters that are sensitive or classified. And that makes a lot of sense to me in terms of a general policy. I don't think Brennan's phone is blowing up with calls from the Trump intelligence heads saying, hey, please tell us what you think. So the idea that, you know, this his security clearance would be revoked or, you know, there, this would be some sort of punitive measure, I mean, it seems largely political to me of saying this guy's been a fierce Trump critic. Let's take away his security clearance. He's still going to be a fierce Trump critic, and I'm not sure it actually makes a whole a significant difference at this point.
All right. Well, that's kind of what we were talking about before, though. And, you know, what makes a significant, makes any difference to folks? And I had that question from the text line as we went in here that for you, Cameron, where is the middle ground? We were talking about the middle ground. What could break the ice? We're talking about dry concrete on both sides. We're talking about the polling numbers actually went up last week for the president. What could happen between now and 2020 that would break it either way?
Well, truthfully, I think between now and 2020 is a tough sell. I mean, it's relatively speaking, it's not a very long time politically. But I think the bigger issue is what the conversations we're having. I say a lot of things that are unpopular politically. And we've got to have honest, frank discussions with that back and forth. And, you know, I'm looking at it in terms of my kids and the future and future generations of, hey, I don't like where we are. I don't like getting here. How did we get here? What are the causes of this? And I think it's a longer term thing we're going to have to address to create some footing and space for what we now call the political middle. I think what we will see in the future are coalitions based on issues where the political labels just aren't convenient right now. They're not useful. I'm sure there are a lot of Democrats saying, wait a minute, this progressive lunacy running towards this sort of actual socialist side of things is not what I signed up for. I think the middle's still there. It's just everything's kind of broken at the moment, and it's a matter of how do we put it back together.
Yeah, I mean, it's this kind of a go left, non-gender specific pronoun person, go left, is the new Democrat message, right? I mean, this is, and but will there be that point? Will there be, obviously, there'll be private defections, people vote how they want to, but will there be some public breaking of, you know, whether it be Rust Belt Democrats or others, it will say, you know what, I get this, I've hung on for this long, but I can't now. But then will they say, well, the Republican Party, I don't think they're going to say, well, we're going to go there. So where do they go?
Well, the point is they're still going to live in America. So there's this point in which this sort of traditional structure doesn't work. It's just that nobody's really spent and invested a lot of time into alternatives. I mean, that's where I think our next iteration goes. And
are you talking about third party? Are you talking about, do you think there's any chance? I mean, smell the cynicism, huh?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think a third party, no. Because, and I've said this for a long time, a third party doesn't make sense because it essentially gives control to one of the existing parties. But if you have a fourth party, and then you essentially moderate left, moderate right, sort of more grassroots right, more grassroots left, I think then you can start talking coalitions and do it in a way that it can balance things out a little bit better. Right now, our structures, it's causing politicians to run to the extreme. I talk to a lot of folks in D.C. who come back home and they're like, everybody just wants to know if I support Trump's agenda. But the notion that they agree with all of it is silly. I know them. You can look at their public statements. There are a lot of Republicans who don't agree with the things the president's saying. It's just that, you know, the political cost of them disagreeing is high and the benefit is relatively low.
No, you're telling the fine people of Southwest Alabama, the people of Mobile and Baldwin counties, people of Northwest Florida, Southeast Mississippi, that there have been people, maybe even people that ran for office recently, that have said they agree with the Trump agenda. They have cleared the litmus test of Trumpiness. They may not agree with all of it.
Yeah, I mean, and to Trump supporters, Cameron, I would tell them, I mean, I know it's shocking, but I mean, it's easy. I mean, the Trump agenda doesn't actually exist. I mean, there are pieces and parts of it that maybe somebody's talked about, but it's whatever Trump wants to do whenever Trump wants to do it. Let's be honest. And so saying that, like, hey, you know, I support the constitutional office of president. There's plenty of ways to parse your words to say, hey, I'm kind of on board with some of the stuff. And that's kind of where we are. But the fact that Democrats are like, you know what we need to do? We need to have all the Republicans who are in an elected office go set themselves on fire in their rejection of Trump. It only guarantees that you're going to get more crazy Republicans in the fold.
Right. You know, so, I mean, the idea would be that I think would be normal. And before, you know, here come the torches and pitchforks on social media for us. But if somebody running for office in the state of Alabama said, you know, when President Trump did this, I really like this, or they don't have to go negative at all. They could say, this policy I thought was great. This move he made I thought was great. I think that would be great versus the, you know, because you're right. I mean, it changes. That's the thing about a populist message, right? It changes. It doesn't have the laid out flow chart as does classical conservatism or liberalism, which are close to the same thing sometimes.
You have ideas that transcend politicians. When you have a politician that transcends the ideas, it's not safe to stake out any idea because it could change on an instant. And we see this happening to Trump supporters all the time. They defend something, then the president reverses on it, and then they defend that too, and that just looks silly.
All right, let's bring it back home here in the state of Alabama. And I'm going to talk about this more coming up next hour. But the numbers were, you know, anemic would be too nice of a word for the turnout last week in the primary runoffs. Mobile County, 9%. Now, Baldwin County was robust, 15.57%. I think Madison County at one point was like 3% turnout. I mean, people didn't care. People just didn't care. I mean, did not care.
No, I think you're 100% right. I mean, some folks, it's like, would you like a stick in your left eye or your right eye? I mean, it's we don't really care. We know that I've heard a lot of Alabamians say, well, the game's rigged. Like, you know, this deck is already set. It doesn't matter what we do. The powerful are going to be powerful. Everybody else gets the scraps. And I understand that attitude. I mean, I've witnessed that. I've seen that firsthand. until we see some evidence to the contrary, I think we're going to see more of the same. And I think Alabamians are fed up with that. Now you have your, a lot of your listeners, a lot of folks who are in sort of political circles just now have outsized influence over who gets elected. But I don't see this changing. And frankly, I could see a situation. I think Maddox at the top of the Democratic ticket is the only really competitive Democrat. I could see where Democrats are super enthusiastic. Republicans just kind of say, you know, whatever,
well, okay.
and don't show up.
Yeah, well, that was my takeaway there, and that if Democrat strategists, would they look at this and say, okay, because of the very anemic turnout, because it was majority, at least down here in our neck of the woods and at the state level, it was Republican primaries that were at question on Tuesday. So do the Democrats say, if we can do whatever we did, the lightning in the bottle for Doug Jones to get people out to the polls that had not gotten out in that mass in a long, long time, get them to the polls, and Republicans pull this stunt again in November, then maybe that's their rocky road to victory?
Yeah, and I don't think that they're going to be successful on, for example, some of the congressional races. And I think what's happened is a little bit of malaise from Republicans. You don't have a big sexy at the top of the ticket in terms of a presidential race or something like that. And as a result, you're going to have a lot of folks that are like, eh, whatever, Republicans are going to win. They usually win. And if Democrats can say, we're going to literally turn out everybody. I mean, our turnout rate is going to be 80%. Yeah, they're competitive at that.
With 15% or whatever, but you look at now, obviously I'm parsing numbers because you had Democrats and Republicans in some counties voting in the runoff, and then you had Republicans in other counties. So there's a mix, but if you could parse it out and say Republicans turned out at 15% or whatever it is, come up with some number under 20%. They turned out at that percentage, and then the Democrats turnout machine for the special election for Senate and I forget what the number was for Doug Jones, but it was very high. Is there something, not because they're the majority, but they're the majority of people that show up in early November?
Yeah, I think it is certainly possible. What I keep coming back to is Democrats had Roy Moore to demagogue. I mean, they had somebody that they could be like, this guy is horrible, and had plenty of sound bites, plenty of other stuff. I don't know that Walt Maddox has that. And so I think that's where it becomes difficult to get that super turnout. But, I mean, that's the name of the game. I mean, Democrats right now, I'm not trying to sway a lot of Republicans. I'm saying I need to get out every possible Democrat who's been hiding in the woodwork in Alabama and just dejected and demoralized and say, hey, we can actually win this. I just don't think there's enough of what I call a fright factor with Kay Ivey for them to care enough to get out. But if they do, I think that race particularly could be competitive.
Okay. All right. 100 and whatever days we're out. You're saying there's a chance inside of maybe that it might be competitive.
It's real small. But I mean, you also got to think of it this way. You know where you're going to get a decent – Democrats are going to have a decent floor in Alabama. There's a chunk of the state that's Democrat, that's going to be Democrat, that's always going to be Democrat. The problem is they just don't have a high ceiling. Like, for them to get a victory in this one, it's massive turnout, and then they just win in a squeaker like they did with Jones. I just think, because particularly Kay Ivey is like everybody's grandma, she's got this one in the bag, as far as I'm concerned.
There you go. The mother of all guests on FM Talk 106.5, Cameron Smith, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Sean.
Coming right back. More of Midday Mobile. I'll take your calls and take your texts, too. 343-0106. 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 52, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Monday. Run the phones, and first, go to John in Spanish Fort. Hey, John, you want to talk to Walt Maddox?
I do. Thank you, Sean. This is your one progressive listener in Spanish Fort calling you again today.
Now, there's like seven or eight of y'all, but you're my favorite, John, for sure.
Thank you. On the Walt Maddox issue, being originally from Tuscaloosa, I'm filled with optimism about the candidate, but is he in a bad cycle now with using Doug Jones as an example when Charlottesville was fresh and he was running against such an unattractive candidate on the Republican side? Can Walt Maddox generate the African, or do you think Walt Maddox can generate the African-American vote turnout that he's going to need to do to beat KIV?
Well, because you're getting right to it. You're getting right to it, because what happened with the Doug Jones win is you had so many. I mean, I'm just looking, y'all, I'm not surmising. I'm looking at the stats and what was discussed. You had a very, very big turnout from African-Americans that were voting for Doug Jones that may not have been active on the cycle for a long time. They might have been registered Democrats, but like many registered Republicans and others, they just, well, I hadn't gotten around to going to vote. Well, they got around to voting for Doug Jones. That along, although that wasn't enough to carry him across the finish line. You had to have those Republicans in the places like Shelby County and Baldwin County and other places vote along with them, you know, to make that happen. But right. I don't know. I would imagine, if you have Doug Jones, who took that path to victory, and the Democrats think they have a chance at Alabama, and now Doug Jones is in Washington, he's going to tell the people in the DNC, y'all want this to happen again, you better do that same thing in Alabama you did before. But can lightning strike twice? I don't think it can. I don't think he has a chance, but, you know, stranger things have happened.
I just know that the word of mouth, of course, with Walt Maddox around the surrounding counties, especially you have Shelby and Jefferson around him, has great word of mouth around there, but I just and Kay Ivey is a, in my opinion, a blank candidate. I mean, no one still, I don't think, really knows about her.
Well, I would say that's better than, I would, if I'm a strategist, I would run a blank Republican candidate against a Democrat any day, because what got Doug Jones across the finish line, folks showing up to vote that hadn't before, but also the negativity surrounding Roy Moore. I mean, did Doug Jones win the race, or did Roy Moore lose the race? I guess that's
I personally think in this case, and I'll let you go on this one, I personally think that this is a case where Walt Maddox is going to have to lose to win. I think if he runs a good candidacy in this first one, I think he'll have a chance down the road.
There you go. So this is a get to know you kind of thing.
I personally think so.
All right. Very good. Appreciate the call, and check back in soon. Let's go to, let's see here, Randy in Citronelle. What's up, Randy?
Hey, how's it going?
Going good. You want to talk some House 102 runoff?
Yes, sir. I was just wanting to know if there's any updates on what you've heard and what's going on there.
Okay, so
they haven't declared a winner officially yet, right?
Yeah, right. So let's bring everybody up to date, because you and I had talked about this before. Now, if y'all remember, still in the aftermath of last week, it was one of those too close to call situations in the House District 102 between Stringer and Gray. And they told the candidates that they would have to pay for a recount, which, you know, it really brought the discussion of recount down some when they told them they'd have to pay for it. So they said they were going to count those provisional votes and others. And today at noon, we would be told what happened. Well, we've gone and checked, and I don't know if there's anybody at probate who can tell me, because the individual candidates are not telling us. You would think if it worked out well for one, either Stringer or Gray, they would be on their websites telling everybody. I'm not seeing either of them giving word on how that turned out. And we haven't heard, let's see. Yeah, see, we still have not had anything new from either Willie Gray or Shane Stringer in this 102 runoff. So, but you're right. I mean, we were told that at noon today they would begin, wrap up this counting of the provisional ballots, and we'd know something. Still nothing posted from either of them, but as soon as I get that information, we're going to go on the air with it, and we'll pass along on our social media.
Sounds good. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, man. Yeah, we're watching that one. That's one of the hangovers from last week's very low-attended runoff in the primaries. And I wonder if there's something to that. We're going to talk about it next hour. Come back and join us because Todd Stacey with the Alabama Daily News is going to join us. He's written a story. He kind of goes through and breaks down the numbers of who turned out or how few people turned out to vote last week in the state of Alabama. And then a projection going forward we were talking about a little bit. Is it just throwing spaghetti against the wall, or is there anything to it? If you look at who turned out and who did not turn out in last week's runoff, is there any way to say in 160 days or whatever the math is, at the general, does that is that a harbinger of anything? So we'll talk to him coming up in just a little bit. Also, we'll take your calls at 343-0106, 343-0106. And yeah, if we get anybody with the campaigns, if you're with the Stringer or the Gray campaign and you have information, sure, it will be the campaign that it has good news. If you're the campaign that has good news you'd like to pass along to us here, we sure would appreciate that info, and we'll do the same. Let everybody know and keep an eye on it. All right, coming right back, more of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.